Come on down to Tosche Station, 24 hour, fly through Pawn and Blast and Speed of Parts, Side Neck, Adult Gift, Bounty Hunter Discount, Jedi Outlet. Squib owned and Jawa staff to guarantee our prices are below the competition. Come on down and get all your jet use, Romperos, Targ Patties, and Bounty Tags. Guaranteed ready mix jetpack refills and slightly used speeder parts for every make and model. That means everything you need to chase down, lock down, bring down, blow up any bandit, bounty, or scruffy looking nerf herder. We got uplinks, heat sinks, Fritech, SciTech, and the reliable field tested surplus security kits. 66 systems of sales and service, so come on in person and flag down a roving star crawler. We got what you need here at Tosche Station. 24 hour fly through Pawn and Blaster Speeder Parts, Cybernetic Adult Gift, Bounty Hunter Discount, Jedi Outlet. Tosche, Tosche, what the galaxy needs. Just outside of Anchorhead on Tatooine off the Carillion Run.
This is last night. Never listened to the Order 66 podcast anymore. Because you guys are encouraging my boyfriend to play Gungans.
Mesa loves Star Wars.
Would you tell him to stop already with that?
Fragments from the Rim presents Real Gamers of Genius.
Real Gamers of Genius!
Today we salute you, Mr. Destiny Point Hoarder.
Mr. Destiny Point Hoarder!
Though you only get one a level, you're not spending your Destiny Points, no sir. No matter how desperate the encounter gets.
They're mine, oh mine!
That 82-point crit you just got hit with. You can take it. You're saving your destiny points for something important.
Medic, get over here.
You hoard for one reason. Seeing the tears from your GM's face as you annihilate his campaign villain in one round.
Spent 3 days on that stat block.
So here's to you, Keeper of the Fates. You've turned a limited campaign-altering resource into a license for unlimited power.
The Destiny Point Holder.
Fragments from the Rim, Boston, Massachusetts.
Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Execute Order 66.
Coming at you live on Ustream and by podcast at d20radio.com. This is the Order 66 podcast, brought to you by mapsofmastery.com.
This episode of the Order 66 podcast, all to you, also made possible by the continuing partnership of Cameron Kalka, Alan Paquette, and Ben Erickson. Thank you, guys. This is for you.
Good for them.
Double good for them.
Double good.
Hey, and you're back. Hey, look at that. Episode, well, whatever. 121. I lose count these days. Episode 121 of the Order 66 podcast for November the 14th, 2010. This is a Sunday morning, about 9:29 a.m. The temperature is a balmy 41 degrees, and the traffic is looking very good outside here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex.
One day you will achieve your dream of having a career in professional meteorology.
Maybe so. Maybe so. I'm GM Dave, one of your dudes this afternoon, morning, evening, whenever you just choose to listen. And that guy there, that's GM Chris.
What is up, Gamer Nation? It is I, GM Chris. And before we get off, I got to give a serious shout out here to William, to old school.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday! Happy birthday to you, my brother across the pond.
Oh, heavens. Oh, heavens. Well, for those who could be tuning in for the very first time, I apologize. You are in for a wild and wacky ride because this is the Order 66 podcast, the only podcast entirely devoted to Star Wars Saga Edition role-playing.
Yeah.
And we had some awesome bumpers off the top of the show, man.
Yeah, we have some more at the end, too.
Oh, gosh. Thank you, Gamer Nation. Awesome stuff. I can't wait to hear the ones at the end of the show.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
It's excellent. Excellent.
Excellent.
Yeah, so it's been a couple of weeks since our last show where we did some Visions of the Force. You know what? I have a new Visions of the Force bumper and everything, and now we're not going
to
use it.
Really? Mm-hmm. Really? Well, okay, okay. I'd like to call an audible. I mean, can we hear this thing, or do you want to shock players with the next Visions of the Force?
I mean, I can certainly play it. It's really, you know. I mean, if you'd like to hear it,
I want to get some consensus from the chat as to whether or not they want to hear it or whether or not they want to play it. Because of course, you know, those of us those who are amazingly, we got like what? How many people have woken up at the butt crack of dawn Sunday morning to watch us live on Ustream?
It's 38, dude. 38. I am amazed.
Thief.
Yes.
I mean, it's no, you know, it's not the several hundred we have when Rodney's on or Sam Witwer, but for a Sunday morning, that's
fantastic. And so far, they're saying bring it.
Oh, bring it, bring it, bring it, bring it. Well, thank you, Echo Base. Well, let's hear this.
All right, I'll hear it. The new Visions of the Force. It's going to sound a lot like the old Whispers of the Force.
Visions of the Force.
See?
Nice.
See how that goes?
You kept the clinot.
Of course, dude. I mean, that's classic. You got to.
You gots to.
You gots to.
You gots to. You gots to. Well, you know that's very beautiful. You know what we gots to do?
Yeah, I know what we got to do. We got lots of stuff to do, and you know the funny thing about that bumper right there for the Whispers of the Force is that you know I keep meaning to call Kat and get her to do another one.
Yeah,
right. And I just never did, and so Taylor had a friend over, and I just had her do it.
Ah.
And then the next day, Kat just sent me one. So rather than crush the dreams of a 14-year-old, I went in and kept it in there.
A 14-year-old who never listens to this show.
Who never does, who has been on this show in the past, but yes. you know. Anyway. Yes, we have this this thing called,
Accessing.
Ah, good. New acquisitions.
Greetings, Gamer Nation. My designation is KCKSim, and this is your HoloNewsNet update.
Ah, yes. Ba-da-da-da. The featured podcast this week is the most recent episode of Chronicles the Pathfinder podcast. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Episode 10 this week. Lots of awesome sauce, and probably for the win, would be called Council of Thieves, the Sixfold Trial. So, join Azmuth, Steelwind, Research, and you know what? They have a special guest.
As they often do.
Yes, indeed. This one has a British accent.
Oh, see, as we know from having Old School on the show, that is a recipe for win.
That is, absolutely. Mr. Richard Pett, author of Part 2 of the Council of Thieves Adventure Path. So, the boys talk development and design with Richard before delving into the module with their usual gusto.
Gusto.
Yeah. Gusto.
They also introduce us to new monster conversions for the Draconic, how would you say, Abishai?
Abishai,
yeah, that's what I thought. And present a deadly, but no pun intended, of course, build for Tut, an Orisian necromancer. So it's a great episode filled with lots of good information and lots of laughs. So check
really
it out.
Episode, yeah.
Pathfinder Chronicles podcast. Pathfinder.
Well, where can people find this podcast and so many more?
We shall have at d20radio.com. d20radio.com.
.com. Yes. Not .net, not .org, not dot TV, not dot dot.
D20radio.gov.
No, no, that would someday in my fevered dreams, maybe. When the Gamer Nation rules the world, but until then, it's just .com. Sorry.
All right, well, whatever. Yeah.
So, juicy bits of web goodness.
Juicy bits of... No, whatever, sorry.
Juicy bits of web goodness. Once again this week, our first juicy bit is a project from any award winner, Gaming Paper, and friend of the show, Master Map Maker Chris West. Gaming Paper Adventures features 100 double-sided, highly detailed, full-bleed sheets of dungeons drawn by none other than master cartographer extraordinaire Christopher West. 100 pre-printed sheets that form a massive dungeon, 10 sheets tall by 10 sheets wide. That's nearly 65 square feet of playing surface, Gamer Nation. With a furnace side designed to be used for the Citadel of Pain adventure module, written by Lou Agresta and Roan Barton, and an unfinished side that can be rearranged in virtually any pattern or set you desire, this massive pack of map tiles that will be completely usable for your own adventures is available to you. Head to the Gaming Paper website at www.gamingpaper.com to contribute to this amazing product and support a phenomenal company and a great designer. They did this through Kickstarter, okay, right, Dave?
Yeah.
And they only needed to raise like $3,500 to get the project done. They got like 20 days left in the Kickstarter, and they've already doubled their initial project goal.
See?
This is going to be awesome. But there's no reason listening, you shouldn't take advantage of this, because for $22, which is this special Kickstarter price, you can get the entire product when it's completed, plus a PDF of the adventure. There's no reason not to contribute and get this. I mean, from a Star Wars perspective, this can be used for so many things, from ancient ruins to a Sith or a Jedi temple. There's a lot of things you can use it for, and the customizability of it and portability of it is just too useful not to get.
Yep. So, and before you guys in the chat room say, yes, we did this two episodes ago, so what?
So what?
We're doing
so
it.
So you may not have heard. You may need another prompting.
That's right.
The point is, we want to seriously pimp it out for anyone who may
do it. Do it now.
Tell your friends. That's something you may have done it, but I bet you didn't tell your friends.
Yeah.
I'll bet you didn't get online and start screaming the praises of it to the top of the world, which you should be doing, Gamer Nation. Come on. We're an army. Let us help our good friend, Mr. Christopher West.
Army and Nation. Yes, indeed.
And a wonderful company, GamingPaper.com.
That's right. So now, again, because it's been 2 weeks since the last show, we have to catch up on 2 weeks of Wednesday goodness and amazingality. Is
Sterling
that a word?
Hershey.
Is that a word? I just made it up. Anyway, yeah, Sterling Hershey, Star Wars Wednesdays, his blog, which you can find at sterlinghershey.com. So for chocolate. Let's see. Last week, he took the time to answer several fan questions regarding his really awesome starship and vehicle sheets that were released earlier, I think a couple of weeks previous to that.
Yeah.
Including several questions about starship design, so you guys go check that out.
This is an example of what a guy Sterling is. So he makes this awesome free resource, and he just releases it for free. And then people have questions about it, and he actually takes the time to simply put them on the blog and answer them for his fans.
Yes.
It's
dedication.
It's dedication. It's amazing.
We would expect nothing less from one of the elite of the Gamer Nation.
Correct.
And D20 Radio's own.
Sterling Hershey.
Sterling Hershey, yep. This week, Sterling gives us yet another amazing set of resources. Web tools and design tips on creating your own Star Wars crawl and soundtracks for your games. So this is packed up with websites, tips, hints, solid suggestions, and is a must-read for any GM wanting to put some Star Wars flair into their game.
This is really cool.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I remember doing one of those crawls for Sam for one of his deals, and we used Adobe. You know, we used the Adobe stuff, but you don't have to go that.
You don't have to.
Awesome.
There's some free web-based tools that are out there now that can let anyone and their dog do this quickly and easily.
Yeah.
And even adjust the music for the length of the text. It's really cool. So, very cool.
Yes. Check it out. SterlingHershey.com.
So talk to us, Dave, about this whole D20 Radio Partner Program, because every week we seem to be getting more partners as people are not only interested in supporting the network, but also gaining some awesome swag from that.
Oh, yes, of course. So $6.95 a month is all it is. And what it gets you is, one, you get to support this wonderful, beautiful network and show. And as a result, basically, the hosts no longer have to, all the hosts of all the shows, and we had 14 shows now, I think, on the network,
yes.
Right?
Yes, 14 shows currently.
Right. It used to be that the hosts would all have to pitch in, you know, anywhere from 50 to even 100 bucks, depending on what they were doing, for all our copyright licenses and all this other stuff that we have to pay for, right?
Yes, it lets us use the amazing music we use.
Right. So, with the Gamer Nation's help now, the hosts of all 14 shows no longer have to do anything.
Nope.
Yep. So, nothing. Yep. So all of you guys deserve a giant thank you for making that dream possible. And it is a good thing. So anyway, yeah, what does it get you? It gets you, one, the satisfaction of knowing that GM Chris and Dave are financially able to not have to pull out of their own pockets. But more importantly, it gets you map tiles from the aforementioned Christopher West.
Monthly.
Every month, you get a set of map tiles. And he has been sending a bonus map tiles every single month. And so, I can't speak for the guy, but, you never know. It might just happen again in December. But for those of you, and those of you that have joined here in the last couple of weeks, have listened to previous shows, and the same offer still applies. If you hear this, you know, the first people that signed up in October got 9 map tiles. If you, as long as you drop me a line and say, hey, I want to get in on the good stuff, then I'll send you all 9. But what happens is that typically you will get 2 a month. And,
At least one.
At least one, sometimes 2, and they are D20 radio exclusive.
Yes,
indeed.
Exclusive PDFs.
They have the little D20 logo in the bottom and the whole bit. Yes. Yes, and the first map that is going to be completed is both a star setting and a land setting for a docking station or landing platform is really what it is. And it's got a vehicle that Sterling has provided a vehicle
stat block
for, yep. So, you know, It's just good stuff. And then next month, by the way, the bonus is going to be a bunch of desert tiles, which is really cool too. And yeah, so
it's exciting.
Yep. So it's kind of a Christmas present for the Gamer Nation coming in December.
Oh yeah. So be sure to sign up. Head over to d20radio.com and click on the Become a Partner. Is it the Become a Partner link?
Yes. It says yes, and it says support D20 Radio or something like that. Come to the dark side. We have cookies.
Ah, dark side. Cookies. Got it.
Yummy.
Yeah, become a D20 radio partner. I see the link right there. So head to the site, sign up if you haven't, and get some awesome swag.
And now we do this.
This is a Hullinet News Update. I'm Luke Lowbrow. In tonight's top story, a real parts and technical crew has finally reached the forest moon of Endor, almost 4 years after the destruction of the second Death Star. A team of 8 subcontractors were waylaid from reaching their designated work site due to a band of rebel terrorists stealing their Lambda-class shuttle and marooning them on the primitive jungle world of Kowak. The team had spent roughly 48 months trying to stay alive despite being captured by a feral tribe of Kowakian monkey lizards, who subjected them to unrelenting physical and emotional abuse day and night. After their escape from Kowak, the construction workers quickly made their way to Endor to report for work and fulfill their contractual agreements with the Empire so they could be compensated for their years of torture. The parts and technical crew was startled to discover that their duty station on Endor was now a gigantic crater. Their post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms were exacerbated when they were confronted by a band of hostile Ewoks wearing stormtrooper helmets and brandishing Imperial blaster rifles. No one was harmed in the exchange, and once the Ewoks understood the situation, they assisted the construction workers in obtaining competent legal representation. The subcontractor's attorney, Ponda Baba, has had a difficult time determining who exactly is liable to pay them for the team's 70,000 hours of overtime compensation that the 8-man crew racked up. The Imperial Remnant talks a big game about being the legitimate galactic government in exile until someone presents them with an unpaid bill, and then you can't even get them to pick up the check at lunch. In the meantime, this parts and technical crew is now gainfully employed, as they have been hired by the Ewok Bright Tree Village clan to remove industrial waste left by the Empire during the occupation. They've also asked Han Solo and General Madine to return the shuttle Tidarian to them, so they have a cool ride to pick up chicks on the weekends. In other news, New Republic Starfighter designers have unveiled the new E-Wing and K-Wing Space Superiority Starfighters at their annual trade show in Las Vegas. Industry critic Bacto Bogfirth was quick to pan the vessels. He had no objection to the quality of their design, rather he opposed the overuse of the alphabetic letter wing naming convention. Quote, "There are only so many letters in the alphabet. Any idiot living on Babylon 5 can make a cool-looking ship out of an X. But what happens when we start running out of cool-looking letters? By my count, we have an X-Wing, a Y-Wing, an A-Wing, a B-Wing, we even have a crappy but underrated T-Wing Interceptor. Today we just added E and K. We only have 19 letters left, people. You might think Z is a cool letter, but nobody can make a ship look cool with a Z. I guess that goes for N, too, now that I think about it. What happens when all you got left is a Q? There's no fighter pilot in the galaxy that I know that will set foot in a Q fighter. That sounds like a don't ask, don't tell lawsuit waiting to happen. And can somebody tell me why we're so obsessed with the Latin alphabet that won't be invented for a long, long time in the future in another galaxy far, far away? The galactic language here is called Basic and our alphabet is called Arboresh. Any kindergartner knows that. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills or something. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go jump into my LOMNOP fighter, because LOMNOP is my favorite letter. Unquote. This has been a Holonet News Network update. I'm Luke Lowbrow.
Yes, JK LOMNOP.
Oh, I'm glad you're back, Dan.
Yes. Yep. So, I guess we step into the docking bay now.
Mm-hmm.
You're all.
D20 docking bay, hosers. When it don't be making sense, we be making sense of it.
One of the guys in the chat room is off to stat out the LMNOP. ELOMENOPEE
fighter. LMNOP
fighter. LMNOP fighter. That's beautiful. All right, D20 Docking Bay. We answer your questions sent in by forum post, by email, in some cases even by audio, in other assorted fashions and forms.
Yeah.
So the first question this morning... Or the first question for this show. I should, you know, I have to get away from the time thing, right? Because you're not necessarily listening in the morning.
This is true.
You
but
could be on your way to work.
I think they figured out what you were trying to say, though. It's okay.
Yeah, you could be on your airplane.
Potentially.
Believing that airplanes in the night sky are like shooting stars. You know, and you could really use a wish right now. Anyway, first question comes from Ben Mowbray. Of course, I could say Mowbray, but I bet he gets that all the time. And I bet it's mispronounced when people say that. Hello, Mr. Mowbray. Telemarketer. Bye. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So, a.k.a. Not Lestat on the forums. And the writer of the amazing Saga Forge character generator spreadsheet. So, in tweaking out... Yes. Good stuff there, right?
Yeah.
All right. In tweaking out his most recent version, he came across a question regarding a much-loved feat. So, he writes this. I was working on a... On the feet, triple crit from page 89 of the Saga Edition Core Rulebook, or Seeker for short. The feat says choose one type of weapon, such as a blaster pistol, vibro dagger, or a lightsaber. This wording would suggest that the feat applies to only one unique weapon in the game, not a weapon group. Well, you know, it does say type of weapon, but we'll see. Okay. Despite the fact that there are multiple kinds of lightsabers and that it seems a little weird that you would be able to deal more damage with one kind on a crit than another. I wasn't around for all the old Jedi counseling articles, so I'm not sure if it was ever clarified, but I'd love to see what you, Order 66 Saga Savants, hey, I like that, have to say about this, and whether you've house-ruled this to apply to weapon groups and individual exotic weapons as the double attack, triple attack, and weapon focus feats work. The answer may affect how Saga Forge 2.0 handles the feats. Sex in advance, Brian.
Brian?
Brian Mowbray.
I think it's Ben.
Ben, sorry. Ben. Brian. I just had this idea in my head for Brian. I don't know why. I had backdraft in my head.
That's okay.
All right, sorry, Ben.
That's a good question, Ben. Now, the triple crit feat Ben's referring to, page 89, core rulebook, is one of the nastier feats out there, right, Dave?
Yes.
Especially for Mr. Destiny Point Hoarder.
I don't hoard Destiny Points.
No, you don't hoard them, no. Now, with prereqs of a +8 base attack bonus, you do have to be an experienced fighter to even think about getting this. And with this feat, you pick a specific weapon type, like such as a vibro dagger or a blaster pistol. And with that weapon, your crit damage is x3 instead of the normal x2. Nice. But as you point out, this is an oddity in that most other feats like double attack, weapon focus, call out that you pick a weapon group, not a specific weapon type. Instead of saying, you know, heavy blaster pistol, you say pistols, you know, as far as weapon group versus weapon type.
Right.
But frankly, Ben, you know, this is how the feat's worded, and this is how the feat works. This is an immensely powerful feat. I mean, it's huge. And in my opinion, it should work with only a single weapon type. You basically have trained with that individual weapon type within the group so much that you're able to accomplish this amazing ability with it. So that, you know, it works how it is read, right or wrong. I'm not a huge fan of house ruling this just because it would make it such a powerful feat. Yeah. Such a powerful ability.
Imagine if I could do a triple quit with a double bladed lightsaber and a shoto and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like in your case, your character Slura has triple crit great saber. Okay.
Right.
That's very specific, you know, but if you ever lose that great saber, you're not gonna have the benefit of that. And that's one of the real drawbacks of taking this powerful feat.
Yes.
So yeah, you know, it is what it is.
Tis. All right, so one of the people in the chat room right now, actually, Dark Cyril.
Cyril.
Of course, on the forum, you would know him as just plain Cyril. Without milk. Or blueberry.
Cookies.
Yeah. So he posts a question that comes up in his game regarding beasts and persuasive abilities. He says, a question came up during one of my encounters where the threats were riding beasts with a noble character using revolutionary rhetoric as a mind-affecting talent. Now, she managed to use it successfully on the riders, but when one of them was rendered headless by a critical burst fire from the Mando... She wanted to use it on the beast itself. I let it fly at the table, but I recall reading somewhere that a creature needed to have an intelligence of 3 or higher to be affected by such. But I may be thinking of my D&D 3.0 days. I can't find anything supporting or denying that. Now, Mind Trick does carry the prereq that the creature has an intelligence of 3, but certain aspects of the persuasion skill require less. So, I'm a little confused here. How do talents like these interact with beasts? Has there been anything clarified in later books or by the devs?
Well, Cyril, there has been nothing officially clarified, but I honestly think this is a case where having a GM who considers things properly is essential. I don't think there can be a hard and fast rule because I really think it's going to depend on the talent, and we'll come to that. As for the first part of your question, revolutionary rhetoric, great talent, page 22, Galaxy of Intrigue, is this awesome noble talent that lets the noble, and I quote, do or say something that causes an enemy to doubt its motives. So basically, you're this revolutionary, you have this revolutionary rhetoric, and you spout it at them and you make them question themselves, right? And mechanically, you make a persuasion check against the will defense of one enemy within 12 squares in line of sight
to limit that enemy to only swift and move actions until the end of your next turn. So basically, they can't attack. Now, this is called out as a mind-affecting effect, which makes sense. It's kind of hard to get a droid to doubt its motives. but can this affect a beast? If you're going strict raw, Cyril, it doesn't. It would, just because it doesn't have a restriction associated with it, not in the persuasion skill and not really in the talent itself. But in my opinion, this is really silly. Personally, I would never allow this to affect a beast at my table.
Hey, Rancor, your mother.
Yeah, so, I know.
I'm going to turn around now and not attack you.
It's hard for me to believe you can get a Bantha to doubt its motives, you know? Oh, you're working for the Empire and they're wrong. That's kind of where I stand on it. Rhetoric only affects those that can understand and comprehend you, okay? Such deep thoughts should really only be reserved for sentient beings. You feel me? Now, as for the mind trick force power, you are correct. It calls out in that force power, it can only affect beings with an intelligence of 3 or more. And frankly, I think you should enforce that same rule here. This is more than simple persuasion. And simple persuasion can be used against a beast because you can pacify any creature with body language and soothing words. But this talent is designed for a sentient being as a target. Okay, and at least that's how I see it. It's what makes sense. And this is a very powerful talent. So I think it's a good limitation on it.
I'm going to go to my father-in-law's ranch later today. And I believe I'm going to try this rhetoric on one of his cows and see what happens.
Yes, yes.
That's what's going to happen. Either that or the bull's going to charge me regardless, so we'll see.
Pretty much. So,
The bull's going to charge, and I'm going to say, that dog ate your cousin. And he's not going to care.
He's not going to care.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, that's just, you know, anyway. Okay. So, speaking of beasts, Big Dumb Gamorrean has a question. he has a size question he posted up, and Order 66 podcast is not beyond size questions.
No.
Do all species that are large take up 2x2 fighting space? This has me a bit confused, and if not, how do you tell? Most stat blocks for beasts include how many squares they take, but not for PC races. For example, I know Hutts take up a 2x2 because the minis for them are large. Oh, yeah, let's just go by the minis. That's perfect. It's a good reason.
It doesn't always work, but okay.
I know. But what about other more humanoid races like Togorians? Nice. We have one of those in the party. Nice also, team. And not only that, he's a 2x2 mini, too. Anyway, also, I know that the 1.5-meter fighting space square is supposed to be an abstract amount of room that a character needs to fight in, but outside of combat, more people can obviously fit in the space. What happens if combat suddenly initiates when multiple people are in the same square? Suppose 6... people are in a 2x2 cell, and thugs open the door and start shooting. What happens? Do characters warp to the next available space? The Picard maneuver. No attack rolls until they can claim their own square. Resolve combat normally, except with maybe a penalty to reflex defense or something. Dark side. This hasn't come up yet for me, but I can imagine it would for other people.
Well, the mini suggestion is a good one. You can usually look at the mini and see what kind of space it takes up. The exception to that being Whippets. For some reason, the large Whippet in the Saga stats has a mini that only takes up one square. And this is one of the beefs that often fans have posted between the one of the disparities between the minis and the game. The role-playing game, that is. So to start with, yes, Gamorrean, large creatures. All large creatures do take up a 2x2 area. This is clarified on page 159 of the core rulebook in the fighting space section. Hutts, Togorians, Usums, 2x2, baby, 2x2. As for the rest of your concerns, this can become an issue. Putting multiple people in that same space when they're crammed in, you know. But it's hard to quantify specific rules for it, as things can become so situational. You really need a GM to arbitrate it. In combat, obviously an ally can't share your space, but what about situations like you describe, you know, when your characters are packed in like sardines? Honestly, man, this may not be the answer you're looking for. You got to run it as it comes. Okay, maybe good suggestions. Maybe they're treated as being flat-footed. You know, they're denied their dex to reflex defense since they can't maneuver about when they're packed in like that, you know, until they get out of that situation.
Yep.
Maybe they simply suffer penalties to their attack rolls for being so crammed. Honestly, it's up to you, and it's up to the situation at hand. But it is something you do need to consider.
I smell a new feat.
Ooh.
Fish in a barrel.
Love it.
Yes.
Love it.
Indeed. Okay. So, next question. One of our newest posters, Perian, talks about role-playing and mechanics and writes, I come to the docking bay with a role-playing and mechanics question. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I have a player that has elected to choose the natural leader talent from the Force Unleashed, and with it wants to create an organization of her own. Sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. While the Force Unleashed contains a lot of good information, I think it comes up short in the department of gameplay applications, both positive and negative, and more importantly to the player, suggestions on how it should be GM'd and how she as the player needs to interact with it. I would like to have at least some guidelines to work within, so I would love your sagely advice on how to use organizations effectively in my game. We've got a well-established campaign story, and the character has a deep background. This level of complexity and backstory provides a wealth of options and plot hooks I can use to make her enjoyment of the game high. But I don't want to bog ourselves down in mechanics that running an organization can entail. Pulling from the EU, Lando has his ongoing ventures and businesses, but with few exceptions do they tie him down from running off an adventure. Baby in advance, Perian.
Is better than sex in advance. He's baby in advance.
Baby in advance. No, no.
Is 9 months more is better.
9 months more better.
This is a really good question, Perian. Now, for those following along, Perian is referred to the natural leader feat, which is page 34 of the Force Unleashed campaign guide, which makes the character who takes it the leader of their own organization, with a scale equal to 1/2 the character's heroic level plus their charisma bonus. And in addition, you, as the leader, automatically begin with a plus 10 bonus to your personal organization score for the new organization. Now, the entirety of Chapter 4 in The Force Unleashed is devoted to creating organizations, and it gets pretty detailed. Okay, I mean, a 6th-level noble with an 18 charisma would create a scale 7 organization just by taking this feat. That's citywide and large, so we're talking a crime syndicate or even a Jedi Academy. Now, as Chapter 4 details, starting on page 65, I got to disagree with you, man. You really do get some nice, tangible benefits and responsibilities for a good score within your organization. Thanks to that plus 10 bonus provided by the feat, I mean, your character is going to get at least gain the benefits of a score of 10 to 19, which was going to let her gain bonuses to her checks and defenses, requisition ships and droids, gain a monthly stipend, free transportation, free equipment licenses, and lots more. And with enough levels under her belt and other factors, she could easily walk into a score of 20 or more, which gives even better benefits. And her duties, her responsibilities are also laid out in Table 4-3. You know, that she may need to perform dangerous missions for the organization, kill and capture enemies, recruit new members, all kinds of stuff. There's quite a few there. And as a GM, those are great plot hooks for you if you choose to use them. To the heart of your question, how to have her run the organization. So, Dave, you brought up, okay, so TG, her character Ula in our Alt-U campaign did just this. She created her own company / crime syndicate.
Right.
OBI. And, you know, we statted it up, and it's hers, and she runs it. So how do we handle that?
She doesn't run the day-to-day activities during the game. I mean, that's just...
It's Star Wars, man.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're not going to... Yes, how many great scenes did we have in Return of the Jedi? You know, they got off that rock at Tatooine, right? And then Lando said, oh, I have to go back to run my syndicate. No, that didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen. We never saw him bogged down. Because why? Because it's not heroic. As one of the wiser posters said on the forums, this is Star Wars Saga Edition, not Star Wars Paperwork Edition. And what that means, Perian, is that the organization should really run itself, okay? Now, as a GM, maybe that means you provide an NPC that does the grunt work You know, the player should be brought in for important decisions and the like, but shouldn't be forced to tackle the mundane details of keeping the organization running.
Right.
It slows down the game, and it's just not heroic. So those are our recommendations.
Yeah. So that. True that. We have a question on audio, but I think we're going to get to it next week because we're running long.
It's up to you. I mean, it's only a few minutes. I don't mind.
Nah, it's a little bit of a long question.
Okay. So we'll get to it next week. Then.
We have a new segment to debut, and that's why.
Oh, you're right.
Yep.
Absolutely right.
We have a new segment brought to us by one of our newest listeners, the Fat Roncantor.
From the wilds of Down Under.
Yes, indeed. So, you know, he flies the galaxy, searching for unusual and exciting species just for you, and so you can learn how to best use them in your game. So, here it is, the Species Menagerie, episode number one.
Species Menagerie, horn, tusk, and fur. For boys and girls to see the fat raconteurs. Species Menagerie, horn, tusk, and fur. For boys and girls to see. This one's got moxie, kids. Welcome, Gaming Nation. I'm the Fat Raconteur, and this is my Species Menagerie, where we bring species from around the galaxy and study them mercilessly for your gaming needs. As this is our first venture through my emporium, I feel it is necessary to begin with one of my favorite species we've dissected here at this facility, the Merlissi. These small avian creatures, found on page 16 of Galaxy of Intrigue, are really the nerds of the universe, clever and isolated. Merlissi value intellect above anything else, and love discourse. Their cute physical appearance and intelligent demeanor also make them ideal species for a first-time girl gamer who you just want to, you know, ease into Star Wars. Our time-traveling division has also informed me that they are readily playable in all major eras of play. The Merlissi is the noble's dream. A +2 to both charisma and intelligence, with only a penalty to strength. Like a bra, a Merlissi supports your two most important assets. On top of that, Merlissi are small creatures, and therefore get the +5 to stealth checks. So that noble, who could never train in stealth, is pretty much trained in it now. Combine this with your boosted intelligence, and you'll basically be trained in every skill there is. A Merlissi noble with a 16 intelligence boosted to 18 will get to train in 10 skills at first level. Train in like one knowledge skill and then pick up the educator talent from the noble's lineage talent tree, and you will become the King Kong of skill monkeys and still have a decent charisma. But what really makes the Merlissi stand out are the racial abilities. Not only will you get skill-focused persuasion for free, Noblegasm! Merlissis always have mechanics as a class skill, which will lead us into the first build that Fat Raconteur Species Menagerie recommends for you. Take a Merlissi with a high intelligence and starting levels in Noble. Pick up Wealth and Connections, and acquire for yourself Tech Specialists as your character feat. And you pretty much have Q from James Bond. Not only are you boss at mechanics, you can also afford any upgrade you want this side of the Rishi Maze. Second suggestion, the Brutal Negotiator. First level a noble, big charisma. Then straight Jedi from there, focusing on the Jedi Consular Talent Tree's Negotiator talents. With your Herculean persuasion check, you'll be making the hardest of mercenaries cry in 3 rounds or less. Add powers like Force Stun and you are one legally broken badass. You won't even need to draw your lightsaber. Ah, the Merlissi, the avian dwarf that will make your threats spill their deepest fears in 3 rounds. Let me tell you, kids, this one's got moxie. Well, that's all for today. If you have any questions or recommendations, feel free to PM myself, the Fat Raconteur, on D20 Radio's forums. And until next time, like we say around here, it doesn't matter if you're black or white. Just don't be Gungan.
I thought that was really funny, especially given Lass's...
Oh, yes. That is fantastic. A wonderful introductory offering for our new segment.
Yes.
Nicely done, Raconteur. Nicely done.
Fantastic. Yes. So keep them coming. And I'll tell you what, that got my wheels turning with this Melissa and the Noble. I mean, that's just, man.
Yeah, I know. Tailor made, I'm telling you.
I know, man. Just, with the stealth, +5. Badass.
Badass.
Without having to fight. It's even better. Okay, so now it's time for Watto's.
Hey, welcome to Watto's. This is Watto for Watto's Bargain Basement, and I want you to come on down to Tatooine this week for our big special sale. Tell them Jabba sent you and you get a free chance cube. We got the deals for you. Come on down to Watto's Bargain Basement. What do you know?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, heavens. So, dude, what do we bring back from Tatooine this week?
Well, actually, this is a continuation of your How to Be Batman.
Oh, yes.
So, Star Wars, of course, being the anachronistic setting in that amazing technology such as focus plasma swords, faster-than-light travel, artificial gravity, all abound. But, of course, thanks to its 1970s genesis, so much of the technology in Star Wars pales in comparison to our own real-world gear. So, Star Wars characters have to hold their comlinks, like walkie-talkies, for example. And for a lot of fans, this dichotomy is fun and what makes the setting unique. For others, it's just annoying.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, enter the earbud comlink.
Ooh.
Found on page 66 of the Galaxy of Intrigue. The earbud comlink is a tiny comlink fitted for the wearer's ear. Weir? What the hell's that? fitted for the wearer's ear, allowing unobtrusive private communication for anyone who needs to be discreet.
Nice.
And discretion is the better part of valor. The earbud comlink size, shape, and color give the wearer a +5 equipment bonus to deception checks to hide its presence. Yes, and it can even be programmed to initiate or receive transmission when the wearer touches or grinds his teeth.
Nice.
So, yep, touch the comlink, grind your teeth, and it goes. All right. Because of its size, it has the same range as a short-range comlink, 50 kilometers or low orbit, but that's not too bad.
That's not bad at all.
Nope. Discreet nobles, con men, squads of soldiers keeping the needing to keep their hands free can all benefit from this useful little item.
That's not bad, man. That's not bad at all. For a high deception character with one of these, it's entirely conceivable that it would even be missed on a detailed search, which means they could be locked up with one of these things accidentally. Aside from just the regular benefits of being able to have a comm link with your hands free. This is pretty cool.
It's awesome stuff. So check it out, Galaxy of Intrigue, page 66.
Awesome.
Yep. And, of course, now we have Fragments from the Rim. We got so many listener segments now. Happy.
Happy.
Oh, wait a second. I know exactly how happy you are.
I'll bet you do.
See?
Thank you.
Ah, yes, indeed.
My lords, welcome to Fragments from the Rim. What is thy bidding, my masters?
I'm Darth GM, and this is the 66th installment of Fragments from the Rim. This week, we're talking about Order 66. With one order, Chancellor Palpatine triggered an event that replaced a corrupt democratic government with a tyrannical dictatorship. almost overnight, the benign Jedi Knights who had served the Republic as peacekeepers were wiped out, replaced by faceless stormtroopers and an air of racial superiority from the human leaders of the Empire. Anyone listening to this podcast knows that Order 66 represented a dynamic shift in the Star Wars universe. It's a sharp break from what had occurred before and what the universe was now destined to be. It's not the only such event in the Star Wars universe. There are others. The destruction of the Death Stars, the death of Emperor Palpatine, the capture of Darth Revan, the ascension of Darth Krat. The movies, shows, and EUs are filled with focal points and key events that caused a dramatic change in the galaxy. There's another Order 66 to talk about that's caused a dynamic shift, at least to me, and likely to many of you. I've been gaming in this universe for quite some time now, since the second edition of the West End Games edition of the RPG. I'll be honest, I've run some damn good games over the years. I've also run some pretty bad ones. It wasn't until I ran into GM Chris on the old WotC Gleemax boards that I discovered the Order 66 podcast. For 121 episodes, I've had my conceptions about game balance, storytelling, and good game mastering challenged and turned upside down. I've found that since this dramatic event, my stories are better, my encounters are more epic, and my games are more fun. I would say that the biggest change to my style is my hesitation to mess with Uncle George's sandbox. I never wanted to introduce something to my games that would enable the characters to alter established canon. My games would skirt the edge of movie storylines and novels and comic book plotlines, but never intervene, never intersect. All that has changed. GM Chris and GM Dave have called an Order 66 of their own on my hang-ups and gaming hesitations and opened my eyes to how much fun this galaxy has to offer. To stop saying no to PCs, unless they're violating the rule of DBAD. To let the PCs fail. Because earning a defeat can be more rewarding than being handed a victory, and to remember that it might be George's sandbox, but he's not going to kick me out if I play how I want to play. Fellow Game Masters, don't be afraid to toss established canon right out the airlock. Let the PCs fail. Say, yes, but what if we do this instead? To your PCs. And if your PCs kill General Grievous before the Battle of Utapau, or rescue Han Solo before he's delivered to Jabba, let it happen. You don't know the power of dynamic change until it's presented to you. It can be an incredible experience if you let it happen. That's all for this week. Thank you, GM Dave, GM Chris, TG, and you, Gamer Nation, for letting Fragments from the Rim entertain you for 66 crunch and fluff-filled installments. We hope to continue to enhance your gaming experience for another 66 episodes. Until episode 67, Gamer Nation, 20 side up, 1 side down.
You have been listening to Fragments from the Rim. End transmission.
Having a little cry there.
Yeah.
Did you notice the whole fire department was going by my house there at the end?
Yeah, I did notice that. Lovely.
I had to turn my mic down. I was like, damn.
Oh, gosh. Gosh. Excellent suggestions on that, Fragments. And thank you for your kind words, sir.
Yes, indeed. We appreciate it. More than you know, I might add. Yes, indeed. It's time for the meat.
It's time for the meat. Now, a couple episodes ago, we introduced a brand new ongoing segment, Visions of the Force. And we got some really good response from it. Well, tonight we're going to be introducing another new segment that's going to last for, well, about 5 episodes. Not consecutively, but, you know, as it comes and goes. And we're calling this, what, Servos and Circuits?
I should have made a...
We will. It's
damn
okay.
It. Damn it!
It's okay.
Damn it, man. See, Courtney's still here. Or she's here this weekend, actually. And so...
I don't know. I got a few ideas up my sleeve.
All right.
We'll see.
All right.
But so we're starting our discussion of one of our new discussion topics today. And this is brought on by multiple listener requests over the past year or so and exemplified in an email from a gentleman named Davis who wrote in several months ago. Dave, would you enlighten us with Davis's email?
Davis, he says, "Dear GM Dave, GM Chris, and TG."
I doubt he talks like that.
Okay, that's probably not. Okay. "I found the Order 66 podcast on iTunes, and it's awesome. Thank you."
Thank you.
"You do a good job at explaining everything and getting people excited about the Star Wars game. I got my gaming group to listen, and they wanted to play Star Wars right away. But most of my group are war gamers. They play a lot of Battletech, and I guess it's no surprise that most want to play droids. Nice! I had an idea for a campaign where each one is a different degree of droid. I'd like to know more about playing the different degrees of droids and the droid talent trees for each because my players brought them up. What advice can you give us? Keep the show going. It's great. Thanks, Davis.
Nice.
Look at that, man. That, like, ended right when the music got quiet, and it was perfect.
It was perfect.
Ah, that's what you call it.
We're going to broadcast awards coming.
Broadcast awards.
Well, at the time, okay, we at the time we got this, we emailed Davis back with some, we thought, really good advice. And coupled with other listener suggestions via PM and post, we decided to bring that advice to the show in a series of episodes designed to get to the nitty-gritty of the droid degrees and the unique talents for each. So we're gonna dig deep into the processors today as we slice into the secrets of playing a specific degree of droid. Today's Servos and Circuits is all about one of the most overlooked classes of droid, First Degree. As we'll find,
degree.
This class of droid can be a wonderfully effective support character without equal, both in combat and out, with a couple nasty tricks up their sleeve.
Nasty. So we've got these five. We've got lots of Visions of the Force. We still have to do our reboot for all the base classes.
Oh, core classes. Gosh, that's an immense write-up. I've got show notes pending for that.
I mean, so Order 66 will be with you at least through episode 150.
Oh, I would say...
How about that?
Much longer, but...
I mean, we've actually got content planned through 150.
That's what I'm saying. And heavens knows what's going to come up in terms of recommendations and all that. So, yeah, I'm actually a little flabbergasted at the amount of content we have. Oh yeah, and I've got four requested ultimate builds that also have been made. So, let's talk about this. Okay, med packs and microprocessors is pretty much the life of a first degree droid. What is a first degree droid, Dave? Of the five degrees, the first degree is probably the most overlooked.
It's usually
shunned by players. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody wants to play them.
Why?
They rarely get this. Well, I mean,
you never
see them on screen exactly. You know, saving a starship. You know, running a Trade Federation blockade or something like that. You know, or racing across through a field of fire or something to unlock the door to a hidden base like R2 did. You know, you don't see that. They're not blasting away at heroes, negotiating with tribesmen to take down the Empire. You know, I mean, they're in the periphery. They're just there. They're unseen unless you know where to look. I mean, do you remember the droid that was, you know, just tinkering with Luke?
Exactly. And that's an iconic image in Star Wars of my mind, you know? So there's really two roles that the first degree droid fills. The first is that of the medical droid. The most common role of the first degree droid is a practitioner of medicine. And like I say, from that classic, you know, gas mask face, you know, B1 medical droid, which treated Luke and Empire, to the floating Uba, like Lamaze droid. that you know, brought Luke and Leia into the world. First degree droids are mostly known as medical droids. In fact, Gamer Nation, when using our preferred method, option 3 for droid creation, found in Scavenger's Guide to Droids, the only template chassis available for a first degree droid is the medical droid chassis. I would like to point out, Dave, and boys and girls listening, that this whole medical droid thing also includes something a bit unusual, which we did see a little bit of in the movies, the interrogation droid.
Mm.
Now, those standard interrogation droids cannot be played as droid heroes. Their mere presence as first degree droids can give you a lot of direction in what your character might become. A little creepy. We'll come to that. So what other role can the first degree droid fill? We don't see it in the films very often, but it is in the EU.
Potentially an analytical droid.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The scientist of the droid world. Not, you know, they're not so much mechanics as they are analysis and thinkers. So your knowledge skill repositories that plan, analyze, and recommend course of action.
Pretty much.
Yep.
Okay, so let's take these roles and let's talk about, Dave, first and foremost, before we get into the mechanics, let's talk about role-playing a first-degree droid. Oh. Let's talk about actually being one.
So how would you play one?
How does a player best role-play this archetype? What in-character actions and attitudes can you embody to make your characterization stand out? In other words, why would you want to play this droid to begin with?
Bah. I don't know.
I think of a few reasons.
Why, you want to be the know-it-all? You know.
Well, this is true. I mean, you know, first-degree droids are the real know-it-alls of the droid world, when you think about it. They're highly educated. They're programmed with a wealth of scientific knowledge. I mean, the third-degree protocol droids of the galaxy might be fluent in over 6 million forms of communication and know the very best way to shake hands with a Togruta, but the first-degree droids know how the stress fractures in, you know, how the stress fractures in a hull can affect flight performance. The amount of water to the microliter that can sustain 7 humans, 2 Wookiees, and a Twi'lek with a bad cough for 1 week. The avenue of attack for a cadre of pirates in the Outer Rim to 99.66% accuracy. And the precise way to make a Duros bleed from the eyeballs until it tells you everything you want to know.
Ah, the interrogation.
Nice. How can you roleplay this if you want this character type and you want to play that type of character? Have a bevy of scientific facts at your disposal. You know? And throw them out at inappropriate times. You know, when the entire party has been shoved out of an airlock in upper atmosphere and is falling towards the planet, you know, we are currently falling at, 1.3 meters per second, accelerating at a rate of, stuff like that.
You become the Cliff Clavin of your party. It's a little known fact that humans can sustain their breath in a weightless environment for 7.2 seconds before they begin to die.
I like the idea of alerting the party to the chances of success and failure in like a really comical manner. You know, the whole C-3PO.
The chances of successfully navigating an asteroid field.
Yeah, exactly.
Never tell me the odds.
Also, this is great for a medical droid. I like the idea of offering, having the droid character offering preventative courses of action in a role-playing sense. Such as, you know, backing up the ship's computer with 34 redundant systems, or insisting that each party member receive a slew of painful vitamin injections each morning, you know, stuff like that. So if you like playing that know-it-all type of character, this can really be a good fit for you. What other character type can really be a good fit?
So, yeah, if you don't want to be the know-it-all, what if you want to be the strong silent type?
Mm.
Right? So first-degree droids. How many times did you see... How many times exactly in that scene where Luke was getting patched up, did the droid actually speak?
Like once.
If that. I don't even remember. I think
it was like, thank you, sir, and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, I think that was it, right? So first-degree droids, in my mind, are not exactly major communication hubs.
No.
That's not really their primary role. They watch, they analyze, they carry out medical assistance. And when they speak, it usually means something. Like E.F. Hutton, when he speaks, people listen.
And that's an important character distinction that you can really make at the table. And if you're a player that tends to make characters that are strong, silent types, and you know that they have weight to their words, this can be a good choice.
Absolutely, dude.
What things can a role player do when they want to play that character in the game?
So I have an idea there in terms of, you know, if you're not going to say much, so when you do speak, offer an observation that has very grave implications. Okay, perhaps even unnerving the living members of the party. And don't speak unless you're spoken to. Right? Or unless it's like horribly inappropriate. Because master of the social situation, you are not.
So when the party's packed into a bongo going through the planet core of Naboo, and you hear the ship creaking and stress fractures coming on as you get deeper and deeper. Everyone's really quiet, and the droid can just come up with something like, the water pressure at this depth will crush a human skeleton in approximately 4.2 seconds. You know, just that's fantastic. I love it.
Right. Absolutely. So how do you play a first-degree droid, dude? Can you tell me that?
Well, there's several questions we need to consider to get into that discussion. What can first-degree droids do really well? What role do they occupy? And also, then again, what's the best way to create them? So let's talk about creating a first-degree droid, Dave. We're going to touch on each of the three methods of droid creation, Kind of. And how best to use each to create your first degree droid. Talk to me about option one, dude. This is the first option presented in the player's handbook, in the core rule book.
Option number one.
It's custom droid creation.
Option number one. See, I played with my toy first.
Thank you.
All right, so this is option one, custom droid creation. Method is the most versatile and can also be the most detail-oriented, although frustrating.
Yeah.
When making a custom first-degree droid, here's what you get, basically. It's plus two to intelligence, plus two to wisdom, and a minus two to strength. So you're really good at knowing lots of stuff, observing lots of stuff, and healing lots of stuff. So when it comes to lifting and moving stuff, not so much.
Yeah, not so much.
Because that's not really what you're built for.
No.
You know? In terms of the traits, you get normal droid traits, so be sure that you or a party member is trained in mechanics, because those fancy healing skills mean very little when you've got the normal droid traits.
Yeah, you need mechanics to be healed.
Yeah. So be sure obviously, or a party member is trained in mechanics, as we said, so... that's just absolutely important.
Yes. So,
by the way, if I didn't mention it before, be sure that someone in your party or you are trained in mechanics.
Yes.
Because you're a droid. Okay. And also, to be sure, never mind. Okay. You have a behavioral inhibitor.
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone but a fourth degree does. So.
Right. So out of the box, you cannot intentionally harm a sentient life form. This limits you very heavily, at least for a while. But sets you up to be a high-value support character. Yeah. Yep. So your best bet here is Sarza Noble. Hit points are terrible, but you've got to train and treat injury and lots of knowledge skills, so this is really your best bet. You know, you can go Soldier if you want to, because it gives you better hit points. It's not a bad idea. You get treat injury with Soldier, but you'll lose out. You know, you won't be as big a skill monkey if you go Soldier.
No, and you are a skillful...
Right, you need to be
a
skilled.
Scientist. That's your role.
Precisely. Yes. I'm not a trash can, I'm a scientist.
Yeah. Okay, talk to me about option two presented in the core rulebook.
Option two. Oh, yes.
Using a standard droid.
A standard droid model. Hey, you know what? So, personally, would not recommend this.
No.
Or least recommended it of you know.
You can say least. I'm going to say no. Don't do it.
Just don't do it. All right. So there are a handful of existing first-degree droids you can make a hero out of. Medical droids and analytical droids abound in the books, but your usually low hit points, thanks to non-heroic levels, subpar equipment, and lack of special abilities, really make this not worth it.
No. So let's just skip ahead to option three, using a stock droid chassis. This is my most highly recommended method of first-degree droid creation, dude.
Seems easier, too.
It is, it's more beneficial. You got one option, okay, if you're using option three, and that is the medical droid chassis, page 12 of the Scavenger's Guide to Droids.
Yep.
And what a bang for your buck. You get a plus two to strength, a plus two to intelligence, minus two to strength. That's nice. You don't get the wisdom bump, you know, which is nice for treat injury, but that's okay, and we'll see why. Because of the next feature of the chassis, hardwired design treat injury. Basically, with this chassis, you are always trained in treat injury at first level.
Dude.
Always. Regardless of class, you're automatically trained in this skill. No skill training expenditure, no feat, no class skill list requirement. You're always automatically trained in treat injury.
So the intelligence bump gives you extra skills to train in, and you lose one that you have to pick normally.
Yes.
Nice.
In addition, you get a bonus feat. You can choose to automatically get skill focus treat injury or skill focus knowledge life sciences. You have to be trained, obviously, in whichever one you choose to skill focus in. Dude, bam.
Bam! That just happened.
Okay, this means that you can go Soldier, Scoundrel, Scout, anything, and still start off as an amazing medic with an immediate plus 10 to treat injury if you choose, thanks to the training and the skill focus. No feats spent, nothing. Scoundrel, and noble are both excellent options for your first level with option three, but we'll come to that later.
Nice.
So, okay, let's talk first degree droid talents. So one of the cooler things about playing a droid is access to a talent tree that is unique to your droid's degree. Now, these droid talents can be taken, similar to force talents, at any time in place of your class talent. Okay. The first degree droid talent was first published on page 102 of the Force Unleashed campaign guide, and then expanded even further on page 26 of Scavenger's Guide to Droids. Now, we're going to talk about the talents for this tree found in both books. All right? Dave, hit us up with the first talent here, because this is a doozy.
This is the big one, medical droid. Simple and amazingly effective. So, here's what it is. When you perform first aid, you heal 2 hit points for every point by which your check result exceeds the DC instead of 1, right? So, okay, this replicates one of the medic's prestige class talents, all right? This is, prestige class, okay?
8th level, minimum.
All right, and you got it at first freaking level.
If you want.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah. It's also a prerequisite for lots of other stuff here that we'll get to in a second. But, I mean, dude, you're 2 hit points instead of 1 for every point in which your check result exceeds the DC. I mean, that's you're double.
So if I hit a DC 20, I'm healing them their character level plus 5 normally. With this, I'm healing them their character level plus 10.
There's, right.
Yeah. Why would you not do this?
I know. And if you're already trained and you've taken skill focus.
That's what I'm saying.
Hello?
You can take 10 and hit a DC 20
right.
with no wisdom bonus and no level bonus. That's
right.
All I'm saying.
Right.
In addition, like you said, it's a prereq for the next 3 talents we're going to talk about. The first of which is key to one of our build recommendations later. Known vulnerability. This is kind of creepy. Basically, you're using your knowledge of the organism in question to hurt them. you make a knowledge life sciences check as a free action to find vulnerabilities in a specific species. And the DCs vary depending on the rareness of the species. If successful, until the end of the encounter, if you deal damage with a melee attack against a target of that species, that target will suffer a -2 to all their attack rolls until the end of your next turn. Wow.
So you hit him in the dump stat.
Pretty much. I can see the character, I understand in your species, the gonads are located here. Okay, this might seem unusual since you can't really exactly attack someone since you have a behavioral inhibitor. But as we'll come to, with levels in independent droid, this kind of becomes a non-issue.
Yes.
But we'll get there. What's next? What else is medical droid a prereq for?
The triage scan. So this is a DC 20 treat injury check, which is already a take 10, and you got it.
Yeah.
If you followed our build advice. You take a treat injury, make a DC... let me start over. Make a DC 20 treat injury check as a standard action to automatically know if any organics within 6 squares and line of sight are below half their hit points and what step they are on the condition track. So this is pretty powerful.
Not bad, yeah.
Not bad. It's good for your knowledge of exactly who to heal and when and how. For a GM who places cards close to his chest, this can let the droid know what enemies to target, what allies to heal.
And this is an important point, and I think it becomes more or less valuable based on really the style of your GM. When I play, I'll let you guys know if you move somebody down the condition track, just because it's fun. I find it rewarding to my players to know that they cause something immense. But there are GMs out there who they really treat hit points and condition track movement as something totally abstract. You hit him hard. He appears winded. You really don't know. And if you have a GM like that, this can give you solid concrete information that the party would normally not have access to.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Yep. What's next?
Medical analyzer also requires medical droid as a prereq. This is okay. When making a treat injury check to do the unusual stuff, specifically, not first aid, but when you're making a treat injury check to treat disease, treat poison, or treat radiation, you can add your intelligence modifier to the roll in addition to your wisdom modifier, which is the the normal, you know, ability modifier for treat injury.
Not bad.
That's not bad, and you should be a high intelligence character anyway. So throwing in a +3 or a +4 to that check when you need it, it's semi-useful, but it's nice, especially if there's a really virulent poison coursing through your veins or you're super sick with radiation. You know, it can be pretty useful.
Ah, yes, out of the chat room, I love this. The droid, I'm saving your life. I predict an 87% chance you will develop the malignant cancerous growth in that limb, so I will perform a preemptive amputation for you.
Exactly! That's awesome!
Nice.
Okay, so this next talent, tell us about you, because I love it. This is one of the, up with medical droid, this is one of the best talents in the tree.
Nothing else in the game gives you this. Dull the pain. So what it's called, it's a full round action. Make a DC 15 treat injury check to move an adjacent living character +1 up the condition track. One step up the condition track, okay?
No med pack expenditure, no med kit required.
You're just making a DC 15 injury check, which you should be able to do with your eyes closed.
Yes.
Nothing else does this in the game, period.
No. It really doesn't. Not without like a force power use and a force point expenditure or crap like that. This is a no cost ability to move someone up the condition track. You know, and if your beat stick is taking damage and he's down the CT and you don't want him to waste his own actions to recover, this is your role, man. And they will love you for it. The full round action sucks, but I think it's a fair trade off for the rareness and powerfulness of this ability.
And you do have to be adjacent.
That's true.
So, you know. You reach out and bang, give him a little.
Give him a little touch.
A little mojo. Okay.
So speaking of the whole, it kind of in line with the known vulnerability, we have the interrogator talent. And this is an odd talent that is a little bit of a one-off in the tree. What it does is it just makes you very versatile. Basically, and this is the wording, you can create an aura of emotionless, unloving menace that no biological creature can match. The upshot being that you can use your treat injury modifier when making a persuasion check to change attitude or to intimidate.
Dude.
So, and those are the primary uses of persuasion. There are others, but those are the primary uses of persuasion. So you can't take a talent that requires a persuasion check and use your treat injury. But when you're using those basic uses of persuasion, you can use your treat injury instead. You know, when you're standing in front of that prisoner chained to a chair, you can say, you know, I understand that it only takes 2.3 pounds of pressure to crush the eyeball in your skull. You know, something that is like, your blood boils at approximately 2 degrees Kelvin.
See, I want a Wookiee talent that allows you to use your strength modifier instead of your charisma.
Now, there are some species, that's a good house rule. There are some species that were introduced later. That do allow that. That's a species ability. They can use your strength modifier when using the intimidate option of persuasion instead of charisma.
Yeah, and reroll it. Ha!
Yeah, and that's not bad. So this is really cool. It really fits with the creepy aspect of what this type of droid can accomplish, and it's very versatile. I love this talent.
Nice. All right, so the last one, the science analyzer. And this is when you make a knowledge life sciences or physical sciences roll, you double your intelligence bonus on the check.
Not bad.
Yeah. So it's useful for an analyst and, you know, helps uncover key pieces of data. Well, with other stuff out there, I wouldn't necessarily put this at the head of my list.
No, it really depends on the type of character you're wanting to make. If you're going for that analyzer droid, keep in mind, you can make expert knowledge checks to uncover key pieces of data about a threat, and this makes you do that all the better. That's kind of the usage.
Yep.
So, okay, man, let's talk about some builds here, some first-degree droid builds. How do we bring all this together? What types of characters can you make with all this varied info? As usual, we're going to present two build options for highly effective characters that want to epitomize being a first-degree droid. Dave, hit us up with our first build here.
Uh-huh.
What are we calling it?
The Walking Med Pack. So this is the player that loves playing the support character, and this rolls for you. So your focus is on being one of the best healers in the game with a few other little nasty support options you might have up your sleeve. So let's talk about the base class. If you're using option 1, Noble is really your best choice. It'll let you train and treat injury as well as all the knowledge skills. Do what you can to shore up your wisdom and intelligence. And soldier can also work. It's really an excellent choice for the hit points, and we'll let you train and treat injury. But you'll need to multi-class back in the noble almost immediately to pick up those skill training feats to learn those knowledge skills.
Very important.
Yep. So if you're playing option 3, you've got much better options available. So hint, hint, option 3. Namely, well,
what better options are available for 3?
Scoundrel.
Scoundrel?
Yeah. Okay, so I hear from your voice. It may sound a little bit odd, okay, but option 3, you always are trained in treat injury, and you have the ability to be skill-focused and treat injury as well.
Off the bat, yeah, okay.
Okay. Scoundrel gets you mechanics.
Okay. No, which noble does not. Got it, okay.
Right. All the knowledge skills and acrobatics.
Acrobatics?
Yeah. Acrobatics. So a droid is probably not going to attack anybody. You're going to spend your standard action to use full round defensive action, which is a wise choice. Training in acrobatics gives you a plus 10 to reflex defense when doing so.
And that's why you want to train in acrobatics.
Because you don't want to get hit.
And you're not going to be a Jedi because you're a droid, so...
Right.
Scoundrel.
So there's... Excellent. How about that? How about that for a little bit of... Okay, so talent.
Talents. Okay, talents.
All right, if you're considering base class talents, the noble's inspiration and leadership talent trees are really made for a character like this. If you end up with a level in soldier, there's little for you. So use that level to take a first-degree droid talent. Scoundrel levels can provide a great skill boost with Fool's Luck and Knack.
Great talents.
Yeah, but ultimately, you should be looking at the first-degree droid talent tree. For this build, Medical Droid and Dull the Pain are your first choices.
Yeah.
Those are the ones we really like. And as you progress, Medical Analyzer, Triage Scan, can provide some good benefits.
Cool. Okay.
All right, so feats. What about feats? It goes without saying that skill focus, treat injury, and skill focus, knowledge, life science is pretty much essential.
Yeah.
Yeah, So you may already be ahead of the curve on this if you chose option 3 for droid creation.
Yeah.
Cybernetic surgery and surgical expertise are also great choices. And make sure that you have a surgery kit, obviously, on your tool mount.
You get a free tool mount with option 3 droid chassis.
See, more reasons for option 3.
Yep.
Rapport is also a fantastic feat to make you a better support character. But, and of course this is very important.
Can't say this enough.
Yep, be sure you have access to mechanics either through someone in your party or through your own skill choices. As a noble, obviously this is tough. So this might mean a little bit of multi-classing, so plan accordingly.
Okay.
All right, once you get up in level, when you look at prestige class, go back and listen to episode number 63.
Yeah.
Because we cover independent droids back in episode 63. At level 4, there is no reason not to take this prestige class. So be sure you train and use computer. It's a prerequisite. And, aside from sapience at that first level, which disables that pesky behavioral inhibitor, you'll get an impressive D12 hit die. That by itself is a reason to take all 10 levels in the prestige class. Hotwired processors are great talent to boost your treat injury and knowledge skills. Repair self and soft reset make you much more survivable.
Cool.
That's the route you should go in when it comes
So what about the bottom line? How would this character work?
Well, bottom line, dude, you're a medic. Stay out of the line of fire. Stay close to your allies. Use full defensive action whenever you can. Spend your time buffing your allies, trying not to get hit.
Yeah.
You've got med packs ready. In your hands. You can jump into the fray, perform first aid, move your allies up the condition track, and at the end of the day, your party will absolutely love you. So if you're the guy that gets stuck with the first level, if in this party that's going to have 5, classes of droids, if you're the dude that's going to be, in the first degree, then this is the choice for you.
Well, in that particular party, it would be tough because, honestly, that's one thing about this particular degree of droid. You're not that useful to other droids.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that fact. You know, you're going to have mechanics for that.
I mean, you really are. Now, there's a lot of talents, especially in the trees, that say you can, like, okay, like, Dull the Pain is a good one. It doesn't say you can't use it against droids. Now, as a GM, I would never allow that. You can't use trait injury against a droid, period.
Yeah.
Just because that's silly. But the first degree droid is really, when you're playing this medic character, to me, it seems like it would be this the most useful in a party of entirely organics where you are the only droid.
If you decide to go first.
If you decide to go first, yes. Cool. Okay. Well, the second build we're going to talk about is one that we've labeled the Dissector.
That sounds sinister.
It's supposed to be. This is an unusual build. It focuses on the concept of using knowledge of your foes and their biologies to defeat them and to help your allies defeat them. Base classes. If you're using option one, the same recommendations that Dave made for the last build, they still apply. Soldier is actually a much more acceptable option here, strictly for the hit points, since you're going to be much closer to combat than normal. In addition, this build, as we're going to see, focuses on one talent that requires you to hit your foes. Therefore, a full base attack bonus, also very helpful. If you're playing option three, Scoundrel is still a great choice for the same reasons, but Soldier, again, still an incredibly viable option for option three. But you're going to want to multi-class as well to get those knowledge skills, which you're not going to have access to as Soldier, that are going to be very, very important. Talents. For the base class talents, if you're going Noble, the Educated and Spontaneous Skill talents, great options for this. This character is all about knowledge checks, okay? Fool's Luck, Knack, they're still great choices for Scoundrel levels for the same reasons. But Soldier talents can carry some serious weight for this build, okay? Indomitable, Extra Second Wind. These can be essential choices, especially for a droid character who has a hard time healing anyway. But still, I to agree with Dave, the first degree droid talent should be your starting point. You know, for this build, known vulnerability epitomizes what you are there to do. You're there to use your knowledge to hurt your foes. But you're not going to be able to take it until you have the medical droid talent and until you disable your behavioral inhibitor, which means you can hit somebody. So it honestly can wait a bit until you get to fourth level and independent droid. Science Analyzer is also not only fitting but powerful for that know-it-all type, and an Interrogator is utter brilliance for this concept, allowing you to also fill in the role of the party noble when needed in a really creepy, disturbing kind of way. Feats.
Yes.
Skill-focused treat injury, very important for Interrogator, but you should also work to train and get skill-focused in as many knowledge skills as you can, starting with life sciences and physical sciences.
Yep.
Again, you could already be ahead of the game if you chose an option three for droid creation. You'll be in combat a lot of the time with this build, so toughness, improved defenses, those are wise choices, as is rapport, once again, to give you something to do for those first few levels before you hit independent droid. And again, don't forget about mechanics.
We've only said it about 9 times so far.
Huh. Lastly, and this is important for this build, grab martial arts.
Why?
1, 2, and 3, as many as you can. Not only, Dave, for the reflex defense boost it gives you, but the ability to deal good damage with your unarmed strike, which works into known vulnerability even better.
Ah, there you go.
Okay. Couple it with a mechanical martial arts feat from Scavenger's Guide, and you are a dangerous, dangerous droid.
You're a bad man.
You're a bad man. Prestige classes, hit independent droids as quickly as possible. Again, the Sapience ability is key to this build and being able to use known vulnerability, as well as make good on those interrogator threats that you're making when they perhaps don't pan out.
I'm about to rip your balls off.
Pretty much. Power surge, power boost. In the prestige class, also make you a nastier melee combatant, and again, you're going to need that D12 hit die when you're up close. The bottom line, this character will spout scientific facts like mad, but have a programmed fascination with organic beings to the point of disturbingness. you're anxious to take them apart. You use your biological knowledge to strike with deadly intent. Not so much to cause damage yourself, but really to soften your foe up for your allies to decimate. Couple that with your wealth of scientific knowledge that you can provide on the fly, especially when it comes to assessing threats. The general alternate roles you can fill with Interrogator, supplementing the Noble as needed, make you a pretty unique and dangerous character.
Yes.
So there you go.
Awesome.
So those are some options, folks, for a first-degree droid. The first of the five we'll be discussing in some upcoming shows with our Servos and Circuits segment. So hope you gleaned a little bit about that and can make some awesome character recommendations or NPCs based on our semi-useful advice.
Yes.
And big thanks to Davis for his email. It's taken us, like I said, months really to get to this topic. So we pretty much emailed him all this when he initially emailed me. But this is some great advice to get off to the Gamer Nation, and hopefully you guys can make use of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Ah, the sad end of music comes.
Indeed. So you guys remember to hit d20radio.com, email us at at GMDave at d20radio.com, GMChris at d20radio.com.
Call us.
That's right, the loser line.
206-600-5872.
LUSA.
And we actually did get an audio question. We didn't have time to play this week, but we'll play it next episode.
We will play it next episode. And
thank you all for the bumpers we got, too.
Absolutely, guys. We've got a couple more liners here at the end, and lefties will rule. We promise we will get to your question next week.
Definitely.
I absolutely.
Until then, guys, be sure to check out the website. Email us for anything you might need. And while you're flitting about on the nets, be sure to stop by the website of show sponsor and awesome cartographer, Chris West, at mapsofmastery.com, and check out some awesome gaming products for your Star Wars gaming needs.
That's right. So, as usual, special thanks to Full On Gamer, Sterling Hershey, of course, Christopher West,
Fat Raconteur,
Dan Pomeroy. You know, everybody who's made this show one of the better shows that we've had, GM Phil.
Yes.
It's one of the better shows we've had in a while. And with that, oh, wait, that's your line.
Peace, love, and good gaming.
And keep the dice rolling.
This is Full On Gamer, and I never listen to the Order 66 podcast because that's a rule. And I've never been known to suspend the rules.
Hello, this is Master Silverback, King of the Apes, and I just wanted to let my good friends in the Gamer Nation know that on Tuesday, I took down a 12-year incumbent to become the newest member of my county board. And so the age of gamer government begins. The voters supported me because they know that I never, ever listen to the Order 66 podcast.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com. This podcast and related websites are not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited, 20th Century Fox, or Wizards of the Coast, and are intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at starwars.com. The official Wizards of the Coast site can be found at wizards.com. Star Wars, the Star Wars logo, D20 logo, D20 system references, all names, pictures of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyright of Lucasfilm Limited, Wizards of the Coast, or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast and its related website, including graphical, textual, audio, and visual information, is the intellectual property of the Order 66 podcast.